The following programming is sponsored by Mark J. Bernstein. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Entrepreneur, author, and financial consultant Mark Bernstein helps high-performing entrepreneurial business owners create a vision for the future and follow through on their goals and intentions. Ange Honorato is a business growth strategist who blends psychology and business together to create conscious leaders and business owners who impact the world. Founders Forum is a radio show podcast sharing the real stories behind entrepreneurship as founders discover more about themselves while providing valuable lessons and some fun and entertainment for you. Now, here's Mark and Ange.
Good morning, America. How are you? We were just talking about music, so I figured I'd sing a little bit. Didn't warm up my voice this morning, so apologize for that. But anyway, good morning, Arlo. Good morning, Ange. Good morning, Dawn. Good morning, Mark. So we'll hear from all of them in a minute. But Ange, why don't you take us to our topic of the day, and we'll hear from everybody.
Yeah, you know, Mark, we were chatting offline before the show this morning about the concept of what I like to call courageous conversations. So not a lot of people like to think of them as, you know, difficult conversations and things of that nature, but I call them courageous because whether it's personal or in your business life or with our clients, having to have the tough conversations to say things that people may not want to hear or that we might not want to hear the response to, it's just a necessary part of life and business. So I am very curious
because we've got and life outside
really
of business.
Amazing people.
And life outside of business.
Absolutely. Well, probably even more so, especially in the world today. And so we were thinking about that. And I'd love to hear your thoughts and obviously from the folks on our show today, too, because I think we'll have some pretty interesting perspectives about that.
Well, I'll just tell you my experience with courageous conversations are that I'm good at doing them after a lot of years of practice, but I have to put a lot of thought and energy into them. And sometimes it takes energy. Sometimes when I'm on the precipice of having one, I don't sleep well at night, but I end up waking up with a lot of the answers because I kind of, you know, comes in the sleep or in meditation and that kind of thing. But there's kind of a spiritual readiness that has to happen for me before I have them. That's what I would say.
Oh, I love that word. You know that. That's very true. Very, very true.
Is that a woo-woo moment? That was a woo. Did we get a woo woo moment out of that?
That's a woo woo moment. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you, Mark. I'm rubbing off on you.
That's right. I don't think you had to rub off too much, but anyway. So let's ask Dawn what she thinks about that.
Well, when you first said courageous conversations, I was thinking about how I was asked as an entrepreneur to come up with my origin story, and for me, it took a lot of courage to speak it out loud, and I did have to practice quite a bit, and then I did it in front of a full sold out ballroom for the first time in South Florida. And it took a lot of courage to do that. And people ran up and hugged me afterwards. Mm. So it was worth it to be vulnerable in front of people. So the advice was good.
Vulnerability is a great thing to have when having a courageous conversation. Mark Brookland, who we just did a live show on the radio with him earlier. How does that occur to you, that whole topic?
Not great. yeah, the thing.
But you're Mr. Transparency.
I know. That's what's so tough about it. The thing with these courageous conversations is you need to be prepared for anything that might happen. I also spend a lot of time trying to prep. I'll outline my conversation and I'll kind of try to role play on how I think it's going to go. And rarely does it actually go as I planned.
Never, probably, right?
Which is why I'm typically so anti-planning just about anything. So you really have to try. I try to put myself in the other person's shoes when we're discussing. But you know, these conversations are incredibly important when you're running a business and when you have a family. So you just have to do your best to prepare yourself for whatever the outcome is going to be.
Yeah, different takes on that. Very interesting. So, well, thanks for all of your input. I do want to introduce our guest, who is Dawn Mahan, coming to us from the Florida Keys. Dawn, her initials after her name are PMP. She will explain that to you, but she's a project manager professional. Oh, I just explained it. There you go. So founder and CEO of PMO Training and author of her new book, Meet the Players in Project Land, Decide the Right Project Roles and Get People on Board. So congratulations on the book, Dawn, because you were still in the process when we first met. And welcome. Good morning.
Thank you so much. Good morning. And you guys can't see this, but I do have a Phillies shirt on right now. So Angie and I were rapping about that. So my
new
heart
favorite
is,
guest status. That's what that was.
Love it. But my heart is always still in Philadelphia. There's, you know, I might be down here in the Florida Keys right now, but I love Philadelphia. I was there for 20 years. So
we love that you're in the Florida Keys, although it's hot, just as hot here today as it is down there probably. But although you have the Caribbean breezes or the Atlantic breezes, I guess, that we don't have. So it's very nice. So, Dawn, tell us.
Well, and with hurricane season brewing, there might be like a little too breezy
yeah,
at
little,
times.
Yeah, you might get that's
this
right.
This is what I signed up for.
You have the big breezes coming. Dawn, tell us your story, because it's very interesting how you got to be doing what you're doing today.
So I love that you started with Courageous Conversations, because it really, you know, this whole vulnerability around, well, what's my origin story, really started in an interview like this, when I was asked the question, how did you get into project management? Mm-hmm. And usually I tell my, well, it was the day that Rob called and he told me not to freak out story, because I, you know, I can tell you that one later. But then the interviewer followed it up with, was there anything in your childhood that led you here? And I immediately had a flashback of sitting in our empty living room when I was about 2 years old. This must be my earliest memory. And I was arranging my storybooks from small to large. Now, I couldn't read yet, so I was just trying to create this, you know, order out of the chaos that was around me. And there was chaos because, and you might be wondering why I was in an empty living room, because my biological mother left, and she left with everything except for me and my stuff. And my father came home from the railroad and found me at a toddler alone in the house with, you know, nothing left in the house, basically. And so talk about shocking. So I owe everything to my dad. And we'll talk more about that a little bit later. But I realized in that memory that part of what I love about project management is that in the beginning, it feels like chaos. And I love creating order out of chaos. So the superpower began on the floor of our empty living room with my storybooks. And you mentioned my book, but I love books and I've always loved books. So it started way back then.
Yeah, so that's pretty amazing. So then that's, and I understand that's what you do today, you know, create order out of chaos. It's pretty profound story. So, and you know, I'm still almost shaking from when you first told me the story, because it's unbelievable to imagine a two-year-old in that situation. And I also, one of the things that occurred to me is, how do you remember that you're arranging your books from small to large? Who remembers things at 2 years old? But it, because it was such a dramatic day in your life, I'm sure is the reason, the emotional imprint that it left. So what happened from there? So you obviously grew up, you got into a career in business. So tell us what happened next.
Yeah. So, you know, when I was growing up with my dad, you know, he's a big railroader, right? And, he taught me so much about being scrappy and doing the right thing and working hard, even when all of that is really, really hard. And so I, you know, as an entrepreneur, those are some of the things that you need. But he also said to me, as he would like come home dirty and tired from the railroad, he'd put his big hand on my little shoulder and walk by to get to the couch to rest his bones. And he'd be like, kid, you're going to college, so you don't have to do a job like this. I'm like, okay, Dad. So my job was to do well in school and so that I could go to college. And I'm so grateful for that experience. You know, I got a mathematics degree with a business minor. I thought I wanted to be an actuary because my college advisor said, you know, my math scores were good, which I was shocking. And on the entrance exams, and he said, do you know what an actuary is? And I said, no. And he goes, it's basically a business person that makes a lot of money. I said, what was that last part? Can you sign me up, right? Because I said, you know, my dad was like such an amazing hard worker. And he did, you know, he put food on the table and a roof over our heads. And And so super grateful for that. But I thought, man, it would be pretty cool to have some money.
So that,
that's Philadelphia scrappiness right there.
So I got the math degree,
you know. I'm sorry, I had to make a pun. Scrappleness.
Scrappleness. Anyway. which my grandmother would cook up. Yes. Oh, yes.
Scrapple. Mine too.
No kidding. No
kidding. Much to my vegetarian dismay.
There it is. Yeah, I never ate it. She didn't make me, luckily, but I would go buy it.
It's not the best food stuff in the world, that's for sure. It's not the best.
And if you're listening from outside Philadelphia and you don't know what scrapple is, trust us, just Google it.
Yeah,
trust us. Don't eat it.
Not to be mentioned.
Don't want us. So continue. Yeah, let's go. Continue.
So I tried a few things, and like many folks, I had a meandering career. So I tried the actuarial game. I thought that's not for me. I tried being a biostatistician. I got hired by the medical school at Hershey, which was Penn State, Penn State's medical school, in the Biostatistics and Epidemiology Center. It's a department now. And that was an awesome environment, but I was like, to grow in this career, I got to have to go back to school. I'm like, I don't have money to go back to school. I'm still paying for, you know, my bachelor's degree. So then the year 2000 problem came up. Anybody remember that?
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
So yep. I got hired by an IT consulting company as the only woman in the class of people that they were going to train how to do, you know, some of this programming so we could save the world, which, as you know, we did.
It didn't blow up with the computers.
Correct. Right. Right. We all woke up in the year 2000 and all was well.
So you had a hand in that. Thank you for that.
I did. Oh, sure. Yes. It was, you know, all those changing of the digits. But that started my IT career. And from there, I landed in, you know, accidentally in the project management role after being in deep in the tech, like deep in Dilbertville. I mean, it was kind of bad in some cases, but, and all the jokes are true. And so I got this call one day from Rob, who was one of my favorite salesmen. And, you know, I'm sitting at my desk. Now, at this time, I was in Wilmington, Delaware, in a high rise. And, you know, morning, sitting in your desk, like trying to sip the coffee, trying to wake up. You're in an email stupor and the phone rings, like, and this is the desk phone, right? And so I pick it up and it's Rob. And he's like, hey, I only have a couple minutes, but I don't want you to freak out. I'm like, well, what do you do when you're in your 20s and, you know, you're ambitious? You start to freak out a little. And he said, your boss is going to come for you and I need you to say yes. I need you to say that you will run this project because I've been working on this deal for a year. We landed it. They want to send this other guy. Let's call him Jack. Jack is not the right fit. He's like 100 years old and they have foosball tables in their office. This is not going to work. I need you to say yes. And so I said, thanks for the warning, Rob. And I put the phone down and all these butterflies just kind of exploded in my stomach because I didn't want to let him down. And I had no idea that project management was even a career option until he called me.
Amazing.
You just never know what's going to happen. Yeah.
So you got
in. I did a good job, obviously, or I wouldn't be here today. Yep. And only thanks to Rob's promise, which was we won't let you fail.
And how did that support you? Because I know it's project management has got to be something that you're naturally good at, but it sounds like there were some challenges along the way.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing at all, right? So I got this advice much later on that was the best career advice I ever got, which I love sharing, which is the best next job is 50% what you know and 50% what you don't know. Because the 50% what you know is how you can ground yourself. And the 50% that you don't know is how you grow. And I just absolutely love that advice.
So
the 50% I knew was the tech part, but the 50% I didn't know was the project management part. Yeah, and they gave me what we would now call a coach, but you know they gave me Charlie, and Charlie was so kind and patient and helped me stay out of hot water.
Mm. So you had two mentors in a sense there to a certain extent.
Yeah, for sure. And the client was lovely. It was a lady, young lady, ambitious client, and she was really terrific. So I was very lucky there.
So how did that job help you move into owner of your own company, which is very successful today? You know, tell us about the rest of that journey.
So what happens when you get to run a big a project and you do a good job with it is then you get a bigger, hairier, scarier project to run. And that just continues until you're running the biggest, hairiest, scariest project in the company. And so I ended up moving into the Fortune 500 in Philadelphia. And I ended up running that gig, which we called the $100 million bet for the C-suite. And these guys were on MSNBC on the regular. I mean, it was very serious. And then we got bought by the Fortune 50. There's always a bigger fish, right?
Mm.
So I had to decide what to do with my life, because the Fortune 50 company that bought us was not in Philadelphia. The best job I could get would be somewhere else I didn't want to be. And I thought I had to do some soul searching, which I most certainly did. And I spoke with 22 trusted advisors of mine that had worked with me when I was in consulting, that I respected a lot, that were clients, you know, and all but one who knew me in my darkest days only and who didn't have any risk tolerance at all anyway, said, do it. Just go out on your own. Just do it.
Excellent.
So I did.
That is a great point to break for our commercial for the Sattell Institute, and we'll be right back and we'll hear the rest of Dawn's story.
The Sattell Institute is the leading CEO member organization dedicated to corporate social responsibility. Under the vision and leadership of its founder, entrepreneur and philanthropist Ed Sattell, the Institute brings together CEOs in Philadelphia and other cities to support the nonprofit organizations that do heroic work in our communities. The Sattell Institute believes that community is every leader's business. SI's members-only meetings and private CEO conferences give members the opportunity to hear from world-class thought leaders on crucial topics like AI, education, corporate philanthropy, and more. In addition, CEO members get the opportunity to share ideas and experience with their peers, like-minded CEOs who believe in the importance of giving back to the community and who understand the benefits companies get from embracing corporate social responsibility. The Sattell Institute charges no dues or fees. In order to join, member companies simply make a long-term commitment to the nonprofit of their choice. To find out more about membership and why so many leading companies are now part of the Sattell Institute, visit the organization's website at sattellinstitute.org. Sattell, S-A-T-E-L-L, institute.org. As Ed Sattell says, think we, not just me.
We are back on Founders Forum with our guest today, Dawn Mahan, and my wonderful co-host, Ange Honorato. So we were just about to make the jump into your own business, Dawn. So how did you do that?
Yeah, so, you know, I thought, well, I could take another PMO director job, right, which I love, love, love that job. So I could do that, you know, and I could stay in Philadelphia and do that work. But all these people said I had enough experience to go out on my own and enough energy to make it work. And so that was 2009. And I've been at it ever since. I luckily had people that knew me from that organization that had left and gone on to be executives. And they saw in their organizations how they were running projects, and they didn't know who else to call and called me and were like, hey, can you help me out? And so that started the consulting side. And then when you get into the consulting side, in those kinds of situations, low maturity organizations, and as far as getting projects done well, you start to realize it's because the people aren't equipped to run projects and participate in projects, lead projects in the right way. And so the training arm then started from there. So both sides of the business feed each other. The consulting identifies training sometimes, and then the training, sometimes we just get called for training, and then they call us when they're like, I look around and I don't see anybody that can get this done.
Yeah. You know, Dawn, your story is obviously so captivating for a number of reasons, but what I love, if we're looking at it through the lens of kind of exactly what you just talked about from the corporate perspective of project management, I think people kind of misunderstand the importance of what really true project management needs to be in any size organization, right? I mean, I think some of the biggest flounders that major companies have had because projects haven't been run well. So when you think about that, and as you're spearheading your own business over the last, you know, many years, how do you identify the right people to come into your organization? How do you assess them? How do you deploy them? How do you ensure that you've got the right people doing the right kinds of project management for each one of your clients? Because there, I'm very aware that there is a very, very fine thread sometimes between a project that just gets done on time, on budget, versus a project that's done in a way that creates the actual impact that it's supposed to.
You're so right on. You said, I give you an A+. I mean, that was beautiful.
I know a lot of people at PMOs, so that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah. So you know, and it's so true. So for my business, you know, one of the things that we have that we're lucky to have are independent contractors who are great at what they do, who have a particular style and flavor and expertise, because there are that matchup of style that you talk about is so very important for the leadership of the client and, you know, our consultant to create that magic, that synergy that helps the project to succeed, you know, despite all of the obstacles that are inevitable in what I like to call project land.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we want to talk about this toward the end of the show here, which always comes up too quick. But, you know, as you think about the critical role that project management takes in any organization. So just real quick, what's your thoughts on how does this impact companies moving forward? Right, before we get to the closing round questions, what are your thoughts on the future of project management?
Well, my hope is that people are starting to realize the criticality of it as a skill. Whether people have it as just, you know, in addition to their day jobs, or you have actual professional project managers, you know, on the ranks. So that depends on size of business and so forth. But I just personally want people to get it as a skill, and not just for the project manager, but for the executives that need to lead projects, for the team members that need to know how to operate as a project team, which can be very different than how you operate in your day job.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you said that, because I think it's really taken many years to be seen as a vital skill, and not just something that you can take team members and say, oh, you're available, so go help run this project, right? That, and it's not all about technology either, that there really has to be the utilization of that. So as we approach as we get into kind of the closing rounds, as we like to say, and you've given us so much information already about who you are as a leader and a founder, but we'd like to tell us a little bit more about what are some of the challenges that you've overcome in how you've gotten the business to where it is today. And then tell us a little bit about how do you stay curious about the latest in technologies or innovation, whether it's other books that you read, stuff like that. Tell us a little bit about what keeps you current.
Well, what keeps me current, I love to read. I just love reading. And I also have sort of that technology background. So I go to conferences and I try to stay up on things, and I like to rap with my tech friends about what's up. And of course, AI is a huge conversation right now. And so that's actually part of the challenge in our world, is many of our young people, and you and I love to grow talent, right? So many of our young people, how are they going to get the foundational experience they need if some of these jobs are taken by, you know, more AI type technologies, you know, whatever's going to emerge in the next 10 years. And so we're actually working on that, because we created an apprenticeship model, just like the pipe fitters and the electricians and the plumbers have, because you need the hands-on experience with the humans to be able to lead projects in the trenches. And so the apprenticeship program is something I'm really, really excited about as we look into the future.
I was going to ask you about your 10-year vision. That's obviously a part of it. Is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah. So I was listening to a past episode, actually, about, you know, about people that don't ever want to give up, you know, their working. And I actually would love to give up working. I've been working since I was 12. So I would love to continue to scale this business over the next 10 years. and, you know, for a lucrative exit and really leave a legacy of this ecosystem that we have, that we're assembling scrappily. And, you know, we've got the Project Guru Press, which launched the book, the Academy, Project Guru Academy, PMO training, obviously, and some other pieces we're putting in place to that are part of that ecosystem that I believe is really going to help the world combat the problem that most projects fail.
Well, I love that for several reasons, because one of the things we do is help people have lucrative exit strategies. So we can talk about that when we're sunning in Florida at some point. I wanted to ask you also, what, I know you wrote a book. I'm interested in what book are you currently reading?
So I read in the morning and at night, and if I'm lucky, you know, like on the weekends during the day. So my morning books right now are, I read a passage from the Daily Stoic from Ryan Holiday every day.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Love him.
Yeah, it's so good. So I've been studying the Stoics, and I just love that sort of daily reflection into the philosophy. And then I also found in a closet that my brother left the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, and It's All Small Stuff by Richard Carlson. And so I've been enjoying passages from that in the mornings. And then at night, to make my brain stop, I read fiction, and I read weird fiction. Currently, I'm reading a Dean Koontz book, and I've been reading Dean Koontz since I was a teenager. So I'm just always rolling through some kind of fiction to get my brain to stop at night.
I think Ange has one more question for you, and then we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah, and this is a question we love to ask our guests, but I think your answer is going to be really phenomenal based on your story. What is one thing or something that you would tell your younger self?
I would say that when your parents, so my father remarried a wonderful woman who's my angel. She's my mother. I call her my mother now. They came to me when I was a teenager and said, do you want to go to therapy? And I said, I'm not crazy. I'm not going. And I would dial that back, and I would tell my younger self to say, thank you for the offer. Yes, please. Because know thyself is one of the keys to success. And it took me many years of hard knocks that I think I could have, you know, helped myself with some therapy early on.
Preach.
Well,
preach.
As the author of the fiscal therapy solution that I am, you know, I believe everybody should have some kind of therapy. Look, and it's because of know thyself. So I couldn't have said that better. I think it's really great. So I think that's a wrap, ladies. It's been a pleasure being with both of you here remotely today. And we thank all of you for listening to Founders Forum. And Dawn, real quickly, how can people get in touch with you? Because everybody, many of our listeners are entrepreneurs looking for project management. So how's the best way to get in touch with you?
I'd say LinkedIn is a great place to get in touch with me. You great. Can, you know, connect with me and message me on LinkedIn. I always love to hear about what kind of projects people are doing. So just even have a friendly chat. Happy to help.
Well, that's great. So, and that's how we met on LinkedIn. So it is a great way to meet is on LinkedIn. So very nice. Thanks again for being here. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week on Founders Forum.